It worked! The day big unit worked!
We're through the looking glass here, people.
Did you hear something?
No.
Did I?
I don't know.
It's Simpsons time. So, as usual, there were many things that I neglected to talk about in last week's Simpsons time. That always happens, by the way, because if I were to go through every single aspect and every moment of every Simpsons episode, 3 hours would still not be enough, you know, for one 20-minute or 20-something-minute episode. So I've started to slowly come to terms with the fact that I cannot discuss everything. But the fact that we're talking about the two-part episode this time over last week and this week makes me very, very cheerful because I can go back and say some things that I neglected to mention. Or that I didn't have time for. The first thing that I really feel the need to correct, that I said erroneously, is the species of Superdude, the classroom animal whose burial led Willie to strike oil in the school. He's a gerbil, not a hamster. I believe I said he was a hamster. I misspoke. And the other thing that I really felt compelled to point out that's not even part of the mystery at all was Marge's being very alarmed that there was a gun in the house in part one. When Grandpa produced his gun out of the cigar box. That, of course, anticipates the later episode, The Cartridge Family, where she was similarly displeased at first, segueing into extremely displeased that Homer had bought a gun. Grandpa, of course, sees nothing wrong with it. And that I will hold up as another reason why Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1 is so successful. Not just as a mystery story told in the Simpsons idiom, but also as a quite good Simpsons episode in its own right. There is even room for like a little bit of character development and fun stuff like that, in addition to the Skinner and Chalmers stuff and several other things. But anyway, we are now on Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2, which is, I mean, every bit as good as Part 1, a little bit more rapid fire, if that's even possible. Lots of ends need to be tied up really, really fast. And they had room for all of it. I understand that a lot of the show was what they call 10%ed. After everything was animated and shot and the lines read, it was run through a machine to make everything 10% faster. I believe the Tito Puente number was not done to that part, but to most other segments and scenes. They had to make them slightly faster. And you notice that people especially speak a little bit faster than normal. We begin this amazing conclusion episode with the Smithers dream sequence. And that's another thing that I really admire, that they had room in this very, very complicated story for the whole speed racer bit, where Smithers thinks he was waking up from a dream. He actually is still dreaming, and he dreams about walking in on Mr. Burns in the shower and Mr. Burns saying that they are now overdue at the racetrack, and it's a little speed racer parody, which is so cool, and which at that point it has scarcely ever been done, if ever. So yeah, that sets the tone nicely, even though it's a madcap dream sequence, for the whole notion of, okay, Smithers did it or did he not do it. As I said before, last week, the two prime suspects are Smithers and Homer. And in this, eventually, both of them are exonerated, Smithers first. Although there are many, many, many other suspects, and that's why it is so fascinating. But yeah, the bulk of the mystery unraveling is done when they eliminate Smithers as a suspect, and then Homer. I guess maybe equal time is given to both of them, maybe a little bit more to Smithers. He wakes up, you know, from his terrible bender, burping cigarettes and all this. And he has this recollection of shooting somebody, and so he goes to turn himself in. And this is seen on TV by Krusty and Sideshow Mel. And that is really cool to see their back and forth, where all Krusty cares about when he hears Smithers say something is that somebody on TV, even if it's, you know, what he thinks is a criminal, stealing something from his act. And he and Sideshow Mel are in, you know, the green room or Krusty's office or dressing room or wherever, watching this. And Sideshow Mel is like, "You fool, you did not write that. You stole it from Pardon My Zinger." And like, do they really care at all about solving the mystery, or do they just care about where Krusty gets his jokes from? Anyway, they establish that since Smithers said that thing, he must also have been watching Pardon My Zinger, and he did indeed confess, not confess, but he mentioned in the earlier episode that he never misses Pardon My Zinger. So that would place him in front of his TV at the time of Burns' shooting. So Krusty and Mel rush to the police station to clear Smithers' name, which is really, really great. And then he recalls more clearly that, in fact, he shot Jasper.
Who shot who in the what now?
And, of course, for a moment, he is even more remorseful because instead of wounding an old man, he might have killed another old man, an innocent old man. Like, Krusty is like, "That's a big difference." "Yeah, about 5,000 volts worth." I don't remember the precise number of volts, but you remember what Krusty said. But then, of course, they find Jasper, and Smithers is totally cleared because, in fact, he just shot the wooden leg that Jasper uses. I like that Jasper never even noticed that he was shot. So that's a great moment for Smithers. Meanwhile, Homer, when he goes to see Burns in the hospital, finds out that all he can say is Homer Simpson. So at first, everybody thinks that means he's pointing the finger at Homer Simpson, but then they realize that he is just a little bit addled. And Homer Simpson are the last words that he has heard before waking up from being unconscious. I'm just reading your comments now. That's why I'm quiet. I'm so appreciative when you guys comment about the episode as I'm talking about it. It is very cool. Listener James from Westwood brings up the bit in the police station that mirrors the famous footage of Lee Harvey Oswald being brought out. And that is very telling that it's an Oakley and Weinstein episode because they are big American history buffs. Other people are exonerated, including Tito Puente. They decide that he did not kill him or did not shoot him because... as he says, he would rather write a song about him. And to prove it, the song is performed by Tito Puente's orchestra, which is maybe the best part. I think probably the best part of the entire show. The more I think about that song, the more I like it. And I was singing it this morning. It may surprise you, but all of us despise you. Please die and fry. and it also provides the best line in the whole show when Puente himself says, "Why wound his body with bullets when I can set his soul aflare with a slanderous mambo?" It's so, so good. Does he say a fire or a flame? I think maybe he says a flame. So that is a small bit of levity and triumph during this very grim, serious time for the town. Another very, very, very great high point of the show is Mo being... run through the polygraph, which just people talk about a lot. It's such a good example of a joke going far enough and then going even further. And just when you think it has gone as far as it can go, it goes even further than that. It's one of the best examples I can think of that, in fact, in The Simpsons or anywhere. Because after after he's totally cleared, presuming the polygraph works. He tells other lies and truths about himself that are all funny. And just the timing of that is so good, too. By the time the real killer is revealed, I can't keep saying killer because he was not killed, of course, but the real shooter is revealed. Most of the town is at Mr. Burns' bedside, like waiting for it to be revealed. Because they've rushed there thinking that Homer is, you know, first the culprit and then thinking that he's going to shoot him for real. Because he does get so mad that even after all this, Burns doesn't remember his name, that he is about to shoot him. Burns is not afraid at all of Homer, who's pointing a gun at point blank range at his head in a hospital bed. But when he sees Maggie, he is very afraid. And then he tells the whole story. This is after Lisa has found out on her own that her dad is innocent. And she, in fact, brings people to Burns' bedside to where Homer also is. Because she remembers what happened in the car when Homer was driving with two ice cream cones in his hands. And, you know, so that is where we see that several items are on the floor of the car. The funniest item found on the floor of the car, which is never made reference to, but which you can see, is an 8-track by Bread, and it is called Pipin' Hot Bread, with, you know, using the Bread logo and everything. And that is genius. So Homer fumbling on the bottom, you know, the floor of the car and touching various things that were there as garbage, touched the gun, which was Burns' gun, which had fallen out of his holster and fired as he was struggling to take the lollipop away from Maggie and was still on the Simpson family car floor. And that, you know, since Homer touched it, that's why his fingerprints were on it. And Burns, when he is finally lucid, confirms all of this. And Homer's innocent, Smithers is innocent, Moe is innocent, everyone is innocent. And Maggie is presumed innocent, even though we will never know whether she really is or not. This has been Simpsons Time. I hope you have enjoyed this edition of Simpsons Time. Oh, wait. I was almost done, and then I wasn't done. I forgot to mention that this was a contest. I mean, first of all, it's something that was never again done in The Simpsons where it was a two-part episode. They never had that, much less had the two parts span two different seasons. But it was also a very elaborate contest that they never declared a winner of, because they could never find a person that guessed correctly. They found one later, and they still cannot identify this person or track him down. So somebody was declared a winner, even though they had guessed Smithers, which is so disappointing. But I guess that's what you get for dealing with those 1-800-COLLECT people. It was a tie-in with one of those collect calling services that were so popular in the 90s. Phew! All right. For once, I didn't forget to say something. This has been Simpsons Time. And thank you, as always, for indulging me in Simpsons Time. Thank you for listening to this week's installment. Para las rumberos, los rumberos. Excuse me. By Tito Puente is the piece of music that is outroing us this week. Thank you for listening to the podcast Simpsons Time through the Debigulator from WFMU. My name is Amanda Nazario, and if for any reason you would like to comment on any of these podcasts, there is a way to do so. Go to the list of shows by going to wfmu.org/playlists/sy. Click on the show that you want to comment on and leave your comment there. You can leave it anonymously, or you can leave your pseudonym or your real name, or really whatever you want. I will talk to you next week when I am talking about a completely different Simpsons episode, and I look forward to it. And I wish you all the best until then. Okay, bye.